Okay, last week was, there were some mix-ups on the announcements, and there were some people who couldn't make it for whatever reason. So does anybody want to quickly recap what we discussed last week? No grade involved. Go ahead.
We talked about the 13 principles that the Rambam laid out and whether or not the people in the class thought that these were things that needed to be part of the beliefs of Jewish, of a person to be a good Jew. And also it kind of narrowed down what the three main things would be out of the 13.
And the ones that we chose were, God is exists and is one, Torah is true and comes from God through Moshe, and then there was a debate between Mashiach will come, God knows all, and that every person is created in God's image and should be treated accordingly.
Then
from there we went to a discussion that given that we all agreed that the first principle, oh, wonderful, thank you so much, Esther. Wow. Okay.
An electric person.
Well, yeah. So we discussed last week in our discussion about the 13 principles of faith and about the first one, believing that there is a God. Then one of the questions that we spoke about, not only should these be fundamentals of faith, but I promise you that this week we should discuss that given that they are fundamentals of faith. Okay. Given that there are fundamentals, given that the belief in God is the first of the 13 fundamentals of faith, should this fundamental be an actual mitzvah? And that's what I promised to be discussing today. And as with everything in Halakha and everything, you know the joke about the guy who they found on the desert island. They found the guy and there were two buildings with two stars on them. Thank you. And they said to the guy, what is this building? He said, that's my shul. And he said, well, what's that building across the street? Oh, that's the shul I never go to. So, you know, and I have to say that I don't think this is only in Jews. I think this is in all people. We all, thank God, we were all created with individual intelligences, individual psyches, individual personalities. Therefore, when you have individual personalities discussing a central idea, you're going to have disagreements. Everyone's going to have their own view on things and their own opinion about things. So we do have many different opinions about if this should be a mitzvah or not, and I brought them to you, and it's interesting to me. One of the things I was thinking of, I mentioned before that one of the hardest parts of teaching a class, particularly like this, is to know where to stop. So I have a few weeks prepared on this one. I'm counting on you that if I'm going a little much into a thing, that you'll please let me know, we'll just go to the next one. I mean, I'll gauge it myself as much as I can, but if I'm spending too much time on something, instead of not coming to the next class, if you say, oh, we're going to discuss that again, please let me know, and then, because I get very involved in the material that I'm teaching, and I get very excited about it. Okay, so, thank you so much. We have extra copies here of the packet. If anybody needs. Thank you. So the question I'm going to ask is follows. Given that the first of the 13 fundamentals of faith is to believe in God, what do we believe about that God? We ended up last week with descriptions and adjectives of God, what God means to us personally, individually, not adjectives, descriptions, even though descriptions are usually adjectives, but Aviva, would you pass this back, please? But we spoke about things not like vengeful and kind or sane or anything like that, but we spoke about characteristics that God has, that he's strong, that he's powerful, that he's the creator, things like that. So one of the things that I wanted to, the reason that I wanted to start off with the overhead projector today is so that we could put out some ideas on the board here, and instead I'll just write them down. You need another one? I have one more. I'll just jot them down here while you say them. When we believe in God, what do we believe in? Why don't you meet in your small little groups and discuss it in your small groups of four or five people? Have somebody be secretary and take down a list of three or four different things that you're talking about when we believe in God, and then we'll meet and discuss in 3.5 minutes. Go. So what is the question? None of that is on page. Okay. Anything else you want to add?
I'm a creator, but I'm not creating.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
All right. That God was before time. So I guess it goes back to creator, but...
This one was a movie.
Before time, so he's and not bound by time, bound
and created time
by time, and he created time. Okay, I can't split
it. Not yet.
Okay, good. It's interesting because if you think of, I was thinking when I was waiting to be picked up to come here. Hi. Yeah. I was thinking about like trying to count on my fingers the lines of Yigdal, because you know that the lines, each line of Yigdal parallels one of the 13 principles of faith. And the first one is the Yigdal Elohim Chai V'Yishtabach, that the living God should be made greater and should be praised. Nimtza V'Ein Eit Mitziuto. He is Nimtza, he is found, which we're going to be discussing that term this evening. I don't know really what the English term for it is, because again, I had to beg my professor to let me pass down philosophy, but he's the new cha. I think the source is what the word that they use. The ain ate mitziuto, and his existence has no time limit to it, which is interesting, which means that he was there. We say this also, hayaho devi, he was, he is, and he will be. Indeed, in Shemot, when Moshe first meets Hashem, their first encounter, Moshe says to Hashem, Hashem, the Jewish people are going to ask me, what's your name? And what am I going to tell them? And Hashem's response to them seems like, if you're familiar with Hebrew, it seems like it's not an answer. He says, Ehya, Asher, Ehya, which in English translation means, I will be what I will be. You're like, what? So the commentaries go bananas on that. And they say, Ehya, Asher, Ehya, I am always there. I am omnipresent. I am always existing. I am always there. I am everywhere at every time. And I will be with you through this difficult time as well. So you have that concept of God being not time-bound. Since he is not time-bound, then he could also then be everywhere. He's all-powerful, all those kinds of fun things. Let's look and see what Rambam actually says. Source number 3. We did 1 and 2 last week. Source number 3, I would suggest to you at the same time that you open up your readers to the first principle, which in my edition is on page 26. I gave yours to somebody else on the street, but I'm going to get it back to you. I
have yours right there. Right.
You sent me a check for it already.
Is that the same as this?
That's the same as this, but this is sheets. Can somebody share sheets, please, and pass one that way? Okay. Thank you very much.
No.
Okay. Here we go. First principle. I'm looking in the section where he says commentary on the Mishnah. This is where he says, where he talks about it in the introduction to Parak Chelek, as you see on page 2, source number 3. Just to give you a short background, again, to remind you, Parak Chelek is the parak in the Mishnah that talks about the people who get a portion in the world to come and who don't get a portion in the world to come. And in his discussion of who gets a portion in the world to come and who doesn't, Rambam says, well, since we're talking about who doesn't get a portion in the world to come, might as well tell you what are the basic principles of Judaism, because then, understandably, from there, anyone who doesn't believe in those basic principles is not going to get a share in the world to come. Which is, of course, one of his basic principles, what is the world to come, which we'll discuss that later on. Okay. Hayashon HaRishon, he says, I'm going to be going back and forth between the English that you have on your reader and the Hebrew in source number 3. Hayashon HaRishon, the first principle. Mitziut HaBarei Yitbarach is the existence, Yishtabach, thank you, is the existence of the Creator, may He be praised. So the first thing that we know about God, the way he's presented to us in the Yud Gimel Ikarim and the 13 principles of faith, is as how? That he exists, and he is the creator. What does this mean that he is a creator? Anybody in here an artist of any kind? Anyone like to do art?
I do pottery.
Pottery. Okay, good. What else do we have?
Okay,
what else? Yeah? Dance, good. I know we have some writers in here.
What about knitters and crocheters?
Knitters and crocheters? Excellent. Okay, good. So in all of these pieces of art, there's a certain relationship that the artist has to the piece of work, correct? And I want to read the Da Vinci Code?
Yes.
Okay. Leonardo da Vinci has this relationship with the Mona Lisa that he painted, right? What's his relationship with the Mona Lisa?
He painted it, and then what happened to the creator of this painting? He died, right? Like several years passed, and then he died. Does his painting still live on after he has already died?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Did he exist before the painting was came to existence? Yes. Did he exist after the painting? After the painting existed and they were coexisting for some time, does he exist for as long as the painting exists?
No.
No. And the painting also has a finite time of existence. He has a certain relationship with his art, just like you have with your pottery, with your knitting, with your dance, with your cut and paste, with your writing, that you exist, you coexist with your piece of art that you've created, but at a certain point, you sort of break off from each other. Once you've created this thing, especially an artist who will paint a painting and then sell it to somebody, once it's out of your hands, it's out of your hands. You've created this masterpiece, you've created this piece of art, this piece of work, and then it's gone. The creator of the world, the Beauvais, is a different relationship. How is it different? What kind of relationship does God have with us? He's here, he's termed the Beauvais, not the Yotzer, not the former, not the artisan, the creator, continuous. How is it continuous?
Well, it's
the opposite of when we create something.
Well, God's creations, some of them do have a finite time to them, like the creations in this room. Every object in this room has a finite time, be it the molecules in the air or the walls of this room. Everything here is finite. We always say nothing lasts forever, right?
Well, but isn't
the only ones of God's creation, one minute, that last forever are the sun, the moon, the stars. Even the earth changes. The stars die out, the sun, even the stars die out, but their time span is much, much, much longer than ours.
What about our Nishama? What about our Nefesh? She created that and that lasts forever.
Okay.
If we have one, okay. It's a question.
Good. Okay, if we have a Nishama. So our Nishamas last forever, but our Nishamas and our bodies are linked to each other. So if we say that we are made up of two parts of a creation, a neshama and a body, a soul, a spiritual part and a physical part, part of that creation dies and is no more after a certain point, and part of it lives on to be put into a new body, into a new creation that will then also die out. Let's take the sun and the moon again. Are there spiritual aspects to it? Does the sun and moon have a neshama? It's debatable, but modern science would probably say not really. But they have the physical part that lasts almost eternally, even though we know now scientifically that these things die out. So you have so far, the spiritual and the physical are linked. The only physical that seems to last quite a long time, and there is a third kind of creation that God made, which is the only spiritual, which seems to last a long time, which are the malachim, his angels. Yes. So there are certain creations that God created. All these creations that he created, though, they still, even though they have a very long time span, there's some kind of finite thing, but there's something else that unites them, that ties them to the creator. Yes.
Well, there were two things. One, that's what Rabbi said, the connected, the connection. It sounds kind of like what you're talking about, but isn't that also like with familial generations that, obviously people have a finite life period, but there's always a sense of those who came before us and those who came after, the connection that's ongoing, even though they're not physically here.
Okay.
So is that emulating the connection with God and his creation? Is that... there's always some kind of a...
But there's a chain. It's like if you look at... Are you wearing any jewelry? Are you wearing a necklace, a beaded necklace? Anyone have a beaded piece of jewelry on them? Or you can imagine a beaded piece of jewelry where the beads are connected to each other, but they're not. They're not all one. Okay, great. I was wondering if you had your ID. Thank you. Okay. The beads... Okay, good. The beads are connected to each other. They're touching each other, and they're continuing the chain, but they're really each individual beings. And what's holding them together maybe is the string that's continuous through the whole thing. And only the string is the unifying force between all of those beads. Yeah, so let's talk about Hashem as the string. Thank you for your hands on. Okay, so let's talk about him as the string, as the creator. The first principle involves belief in the existence of God. That's what he says, that he is the Bore, he is the creator. There is a being perfect in every way who is the ultimate cause of all existence. That's the word I was looking for, cause. That's the nimcha. He is the cause of all existence. All existence depends on him and is derived from him. Okay, so now we have something that's connected to what we've said before that sort of ties them all together. God, as using the capital C, the cause. Here's where we get into a little bit of philosophy. God is the cause of all. Not only is God the creator of all, God is the cause of all. Being that God is the cause of all, what can we assume from there then? If God is the cause of all, what is our relationship with God?
God is the cause, we're the effect.
And we are the effect, and therefore we are only here because he caused us to be here. So we are entirely, completely, 100,000% dependent on him. Our existence here depends on him, for good or for bad. Some of us might have issues with our existence here and say, God, why did you create me? But for good or for bad, God, our existence is hinged on God. It depends on God entirely. Okay. Next step. It is inconceivable that he does not exist. If he did not exist, everything else would also cease to exist and nothing would remain. If you would imagine, even for a moment, that there is no God, that means there are no things. Because where do things come from? This is what we call, I hinted to this last week, this is what we call the teleological argument for God. The teleological argument for God is that given that there is a design in the world, and those of you who are interested in science will appreciate this very much, given that there is a design in the world, there must be a creator who created that design. It doesn't come from nothing. This is the closest that Rambam comes to saying that God created the world. He actually never says that God created the world from nothing. But, yeah, so he doesn't say that, which is another interesting thing. But, yeah, go. Leora, you had a question, comment? No. Okay, fine. If, however, we could imagine that nothing else existed, he would not cease to exist. He would not be diminished in any way. So, we are dependent on God, but God is completely independent, capital I, from us. So even if nothing else had ever been created in the world, there would be a God still. If we say that there is no God, then there are no creations. If we say that there are no creations, there could still be a God. Which raises the question number 4. We say that God does not need his creation. If so, why did he create the world? What do we say of a person when he does something that he is not required to do, and how does this relate to God? Thought to ponder. We're not going to as a class, but something to think about. Okay, we move on in his beliefs. Only God is totally self-sufficient, and therefore unity and mastery belong only to him. He has everything that he needs in himself and does not need anything else at all. God is completely independent of us. God is self-sufficient. We, being the effects of his cause, are completely and totally dependent on him. How does he provide us? Through his other creations. Okay. Everything else, however, whether it be an angel, a star, anything associated with him above or below, all depends on him for their very existence. Sorry, I just said. Torah teaches us his first principle in the first of the Ten Commandments, I am the Lord your God. And here's where things get juicy. Okay. Is it too late to discuss things academically here? This is, you're noticing, this is like the philosophical component of our discussion. Last week we had like a much more emotional discussion of this, but we have many different people who are coming to this class who are coming from many different backgrounds and with many different ways that things appeal to them. So some people are attracted by the intellectual discussion of something. Some people are attracted by the emotional discussion of something. So we're trying to cover all of those bases. So if you're coming a week and it's too emotional for you or too intellectual for you, come back the next week because we'll shake it up a little bit. And we'll go back and forth a little bit because, you know, to hopefully draw as many people in as we can. Okay. So he finishes off with a pasuk, and we'll notice as we continue through that every single one of his 13 principles of faith, he finishes off with a proof of a pasuk from the Torah. This is Rambam's hallmark, trademark, whatever you want to call it. This is his thing. He always, always bases what he says on something that's written in the Torah. He always brings a pasuk. Now, let me ask you this question, okay? Because you people are intelligent people. You people have some background. You know a little bit what we're talking about. Of all the pasukim in the entire Torah, which pasuk would you choose to illustrate? And please don't call out, because I'd like to give a lot of people a chance to answer. Of all the pasukim in the Torah, which pasuk would you choose to illustrate the fact that we just said that God is the creator of all, God is the cause of all, we are completely and totally dependent on Him, and He is independent on us, independent from us? Of all the pasukim in the Torah, think basic, which would you choose? Reshit bara Elokim et ha-shamayim ve'et ha'aretz. God, in the beginning of everything, because that's what Bereshit means, in the beginning of everything, God created the heavens and the earth, which implies that He existed beforehand. You know, it's interesting, just a side point, the Septuagint was the first translation out of, the first official translation from Hebrew of the Torah. It was done by 70, tradition tells us it was done by 70 different rabbis. The Greek king, I think it was, called these 70 different rabbis, put them each into separate rooms, and said, okay, translate the Torah, assuming that there would be discrepancies. Come on, we just said before, it's one guy on an island, he has two shuls, 70 rabbis. How many versions of the Torah are we going to come up with, right? The miracle was they all came up with the same exact translation. And one of the translations that they changed was that in the very beginning, instead of saying Bereshit bara Elokim, in the beginning, God created, it sounds like, again, if you're familiar with Hebrew, Bereshit bara Elokim. Bereshit created God. So they translated it as Elokim bara Bereshit et ha-shamayim. God created in the beginning the heaven and the earth. It's an interesting kind of, just an interesting little tidbit. Fine. So of all the pasukim in the Torah that you could have chosen to illustrate that God is the creator, that God is the cause and the source of all, how many of you thought of that but didn't raise your hands? I'm curious. There's probably many more who actually said it, thought of it. Bereshit bara Elokim, God created the world. Like, what are you starting with? I am Hashem, your God. What do you think? I'll strengthen it even further. I want to strengthen the question further. Write it down. Write down what you thought was. I want to strengthen it even further. Okay. Rambam's laws of the foundation of the Torah, chapter 1. That's source number 5 on page 2. And it's on page 27. No, it's on page 13. 13. Wow. And a really old edition. Okay, so I hope our stuff is with me. Okay. Code, foundations of the Torah. See that? Code, foundations of the Torah. Yad Yesodei HaTorah. This is what we spoke about last week, or 2 weeks ago, one of the books of the Rambam, the 14-volume Halacha book that he did, and he starts off with saying as follows. And just look at the Hebrew for a minute, you'll see the first four words, the letters that are large, that are printed large. Those are that's the name of God that we don't pronounce. That's the name of God that symbolizes. That's what he said when he told Moshe, yeah, sure, yeah, that's the name of God that symbolizes his omnipresence, his being everywhere, his always having been there. The causality of God, or God being the cause of everything, rather. So that's how he starts. Yisod ha-yisodot ba'amud ha-chokhmot. It is the most basic of anything. To know the ultimate foundation and pillar of wisdom is the realization there is a first being who brought everything else into existence. Everything else in heaven and earth only exists as a result of the reality of his existence. Okay, we're getting a little bit repetitive here. If one could conceive he did not exist, then neither could anything else exist. All right, you said this already before, et cetera, et cetera. Skip down to 1:6. To know that this is one of the commandments of the Torah, it is thus written, I am the Lord your God. So then again, he brings the same pasuk again, and just look for a moment in the Hebrew, because what he says in number Vav, in letter Vav, is so complete. I didn't realize there wasn't a complete translation here, otherwise I would have, there isn't, right? Yeah, otherwise I would have brought it for you. The Diyatabar is then, knowing this thing, mitzvah asay, it is a positive commandment. This is what I promised you we talk about. This is a mitzvah. This is one of the 613 mitzvot. It is a separate mitzvah from all the 612 other mitzvot to believe that there is a God. To know that there is a God. As it says in the Torah, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. What's his basis for saying that this is a mitzvah? I am Hashem your God. What is that pasuk? I am Hashem your God. That is not the pasuk from Bereishit Bara Elokim. Bereishit Bara Elokim is the beginning of the Torah. How does the Torah start? Not only are there no witnesses, there are no commandments at the beginning of the Torah. It's a story. What's the first commandment the Jewish people get? First commandment they get, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am Hashem your God. Therefore, since Anochi Hashem Elokecha is the first commandment, I am Hashem your God, therefore the first commandment is to believe that God exists. And he says, V'chol hama'alel da'ato she'esh Hashem Elokecha achir chutz mizeh. Anybody who thinks that there is another God other than this, over b'lo ta'aseh, he is transgressing a negative commandment. So now Mayer's the second commandment is, lo yelecha Elohim achimim apanai, you shouldn't have other gods. And he is being a heretic in the most important way. This is the basic thing that everything is hanging on. But he calls it, which is a very strong statement, but he calls it a separate mitzvah. Very interesting. Why is he bringing, therefore, now, let's see if we can understand, why is he bringing the pasuk of Anochi Hashem instead of the pasuk of Bereishit Bara? Because he's trying to say that this is a mitzvah of Hashem. So if he's going to say it's a mitzvah, he has to bring a proof from a mitzvah, not from a story. Are you with me?
Yeah.
Okay. Sort of. Okay. It's better than not at all. Okay. What about everybody else? So here's the question. What do you think? Let's ask you. Where are we? We're 8:45, right? Yes. 8:45? Mm-hmm. Okay. What do you think? I didn't start off a class like this for a particular reason. I wanted first to see what Rambam says. And indeed, he begins his book of mitzvot. He has a separate book where he lists all the mitzvot, that's verse number 4, where he says, we are commanded to believe in God, that there's a supreme cause, he's the creator of everything in existence, by saying, I am the Lord your God who took you out of Egypt. And he says in the end of tractate Makot, it says 613 commandments are declared upon Moshe at Sinai. That is, he commanded us to observe as many commandments as are signified by the sum of the letters Torah, which is 613, even though it really only makes 611, but the first two commandments are add two more, so that's 613. That's a little gematria thing. So, thus, it's clear to you that I am the Lord. Did you get that? Okay, I'll look. Okay, the Gemara says as follows. How do I know how many commandments there are? How many commandments are there in the Torah? 613. We know, that's a basic, right? There are 613, right? That's why anybody ever count the seeds in the pomegranate? They're really 613, right? Okay. Okay. All right. So they say, how do we know? Because the word Torah, if you look at the numerical value of the word Torah, comes out to 613. Okay, so here we have 400, 6, 200, 5, which brings us to 613.
11.
Oh, 611, you say. Okay, 611. Where did those other two come from? Ba-da-da-da. Do a calculation. The first two of the Ten Commandments, God said to the entire people, he didn't give just to Moshe. How do we, why are you using the word Torah to come up with the 613 thing? Torah, Tziva, Lanu, Moshe, right? Moshe commanded us the Torah. Moshe commanded us 613. No, Moshe didn't command us 613. Moshe commanded us only because two of them we heard directly from God. You can look it up yourself if you want. It's in Parshat Yitro, which is somewhere in Shemot. Okay, God said the first two, we couldn't handle it, so he told the rest to Moshe. Okay. So he said, given that the rabbis counted Anochi Hashem as one of the 613 mitzvot, I'm going to disagree with the rabbis? Like, come on. This is heavy stuff. Therefore, it must be to believe in God is one of these 613 mitzvot. Let's take a vote. In the spirit of the season, let's take a vote. How many of you think not try to divorce yourself from the concept if you believe personally in God or not? Objectively. And I'm talking about, when I'm talking about believing God, I'm talking about, is there a supreme being who always existed, who created us, who our existence is completely dependent on him and he isn't dependent on us? That's all I'm talking about in the belief of God. I mean, it's a lot, all I'm talking about. But I'm not talking about, do you believe that God is just? Do you believe that God is fair? I'm not talking about any of those issues. None of that. Just that he always existed, that he created us, that we are dependent on him, he is independent of us. Now, do you think that that should be one of the 613 mitzvot? Let me give you the alternative. Do you think that it's so basic that without it, the 613 mitzvot are nothing? So it's not a mitzvah, but it's a pre-mitzvah. It's a precursor to all the mitzvot. That without it, the mitzvot are zero. So that's our vote. Do you think, should it be counted as one of the 613? Or is it so basic that it's the foundation upon which all the other mitzvot lie? We could do closed ballot. Everybody hands down. Heads down. Heads down. What? There's no independence in this voting.
There's always a Ralph Nader.
Okay, heads down for a moment, because I'm curious what you think. And I'm afraid that some of you are going to be afraid. You don't have to pick your heads up afterwards. This is the fun part. This is my students' favorite part of class. When I say, everybody heads down, we're taking a vote. Okay, right? Okay, heads down. Okay, or close your eyes, whatever way you're comfortable. Raise your hand. Do you think that this is a basic pre-mitzvah, that this is a foundation to all the other 613 mitzvot? Can I see a show of hands, please? Okay. If you think that this is so important that it should be included as the first of the 613 mitzvot, please raise your hand.
Yeah.
Heads up.
That isn't the point.
The vote. Anybody else get phone calls tonight from Jews for Joy to find out who you're voting for?
Yeah.
Like, to me, it's such a private thing. Like, part of the right to vote is that I have the right that nobody else knows who I vote for. Of course, everybody in the world knows who my husband's voting for, but nobody knows who I'm voting for. So that's Jews for George. Tonight was Jews for George. I also got a call from Jesse Jackson. Anyway.
Okay.
The vote was
yes.
15-6. 15. Let's start with the 6. 6 of you thought that it was so important. It was so important that it should be counted as the first mitzvah. 15 of you felt that it was so important that it should be counted as a foundation to all the mitzvot, without which the mitzvot are meaningless.
15 and 6?
It was 15 to 6.
Oh, and 6.
Now, is anybody interested in seeing historically what the Ba'alei Halakha, what the Halakhicists and Jewish philosophers thought about this idea, what their vote was? Anybody interested? Oh, come on, we're not going there. That's a whole other class. She said, but they're men. Okay. We're going to be looking at, let me count how many I have written down. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 other than Rambam. 7 other people to determine what they thought. Okay. Okay, we're doing good. Okay, let's start number 1. Number one is someone who we call the Bahag, the Baal Halakot Gedolot. Can anybody guess, just from looking at our sheet, if he feels that this is one of the 613 mitzvot or not?
Well, thank you. I love you.
I can't answer that question. I'm sorry.
No.
Can anybody guess from looking at our source sheet where the Baal HaLachot Gedolot, who lived in the 8th century, is one of the earliest known halakhic works that we actually have in our hands, which is interesting. If you think the Baal HaLachot Gedolot, that's what he's called, the Bahag, because we're not sure who wrote it. If he thought, Lemuel, that it was one of the 613 mitzvot or not, how many of you had this page turned ready to look at? If you do, I tricked you. Anybody? Come on, a little intuition. We're all women here, right? We're smarter than men. We have women's intuition. We have a deeper understanding of things. Can you tell from the sources that you have on your page what the Baal HaLachot Gedolot's position is if he feels that this is one of the 613 mitzvot?
I can't tell.
Let me tell you how I put together my sources, okay? I went through all the books in my house that say this is a list of the mitzvot of the Torah according to me. Because the rabbis say there are 613 mitzvot, but they never tell us which are the 613. So we have to figure out which are those 613. So probably, I don't know, probably hundreds of rabbis came up with their own counting of what are the 613 mitzvot. So I went through my entire library, what I had in the basement, which is rather extensive, and I found, not hundreds, but I found close to 10 different listings, about 10 different listings of the 613 mitzvot. And one of them was the listing of the Baal HaLachot Gedolot. Come on, use your brains here a little bit. I know it's late, but you can do it. Don't let me down. No, it's called the Baal HaLachot Gedolot. It's the name of the book. It's called the HaLachot Gedolot. Sefer HaLachot Gedolot is the name of the book.
Okay.
The name of the person who wrote it is up for debate. He is called the Baal HaLachot Gedolot. You do think so? Okay, what about based on the papers that you have in front of you? No, it's different. It's a different book. Sefer Mishpat HaGadol is a different book. Sefer Mishpat HaKatan is a different book. Sefer HaChinuch is a different book. Sefer HaIkarim is a different book. And the Kinat Sofrim is a different book. And the Rambam is a different book. And the Ramban is a different book.
What's the question?
The question is, the Baal HaLachot Gedolot, who is the oldest known codifier of halachot, he either lived around 740 or 760 CE, depending on who he was, did he count this as one of his 613 mitzvot? And I'm telling you, I have the book in my house.
He does.
Oh,
that's
50-50 shot. Okay, raise your hand. You know those little boxes? You know the little box, like a long rectangle that I have on the page that tells you my sources where I get them from?
Mm-hmm.
Can you find the one that says Baal HaLachot Gedolot on there? Sefer HaLachot Gedolot?
You're missing out.
Can you find the one that says Sefer HaLachot Gedolot? No, you can't. Can you guess why you can't find it on your sheet? Because he doesn't believe it's one of the 613 mitzvot. So he doesn't list it as one of his 613 mitzvot. He does not. He doesn't list it as one of the mitzvot. So what does he say here? I brought you not from his book because he doesn't mention it. I instead brought you from the Ramban's commentary on Rambam. This little piece here in the middle, you'll see it says on the second line, HaMitzvah HaRishonah. This little piece in the middle is the Rambam's book, Sefer HaMitzvot, which we read, but you have an English copy of it on source 4. Okay? But the Ramban very often disagrees with Rambam. So, he says, this is what the Baal HaLachot Gedolot says. Where am I? Where's my paper? A minute. Okay. I am right here. Do you see this on the right-hand column? I'm sorry it's rashi letters.
I just discovered it today. I saw it in all the other books. For the last 3 weeks, I've been looking for this source. Everybody says, Ramban just agrees with Rambam, Ramban just agrees with Rambam, and I couldn't find it, couldn't find it, couldn't find it. So I finally today found it literally 10 minutes before we got here. So that's why it's in Rashi script. That's why there's no translation on that. But here we go. The Hanir Emi Da'atel. It appears from his opinion, Shalabal HaHalachot, that the Baal HaHalachot, the Bahag, the Baal HaHalachot Gadolot, She'ein Minyan Tayad Mitzvot, Elam Zerotavi Kalesha Gazailin Elashot, Omina Anosha Lona. So he doesn't call them a list of 613 mitzvot, he calls them a list of positive and negative decrees, but that's semantics. About HaEmunah B'Mitziyato Yitzalah, the belief in his existence, in his being the cause and the source of all, Shehodiyah Ota Eleinu, that he informs us of it with signs and with miracles and with the revelation of the Shekhinah to our eyes, Hu Ha'ikar V'Hashoresh. This is the basic and the root that from it all of the other mitzvot are born. So he didn't count it in his calculation. So far, we have one for the opposition, right? Or actually one for the majority in this class. Okay. What we're going to do now is look at, I'm going to ask you in your groups, I know that it's in Hebrew, but I think that in your small groups, you have enough people in your group that you can figure out just from reading the first five words, enough people who are somewhat familiar with Hebrew, just by reading the first five words, you're looking for the word mitzvah.
Yes.
Okay? Here's where we're looking. No, now we're going back to our sources. We're looking in sources 6, 7, and 8. We're on page number 3. These three sources, let me just tell you where they're from. The Sefer Achinoch is 13th century. You can write this next to it if you're interested historically. The reason I gave you all three is because they're all from the same historical time period. Sefer Achinoch is 13th century Spain. Barcelona. Barcelona's in Spain, right?
Yes.
Okay, Rabbi Aaron Halevi in Barcelona. Sefer Achinoch. Number 7, Sefer Mitzvot HaGadol, which is known by its acronym of the SMAG. Sefer Mitzvot HaGadol, the SMAG. It was from the early 13th century, from France. The Smack, which is source number 8, Sefer Mitzvot HaKatan, is also early 13th century France. The Smack and the Smack were from what we call the Baalei HaTosafot, from the students of the Tosafes, which were descended from the Talmud. They were physically, genetically descended from Rashi, but actually in their schooling went off in a slightly different bend. So the Smag draws heavily on he made a list of the 613. The Smag condensed it, and we have the Sefer Achinoch, which was from Spain at the same time. So right next to each one, you can write on your sheet, just according to that person, if it's an ikar, if it's like just a bottom line basis for the mitzvot, or if it's actually one of the mitzvot.
He gave us the Torah on Har Sinai.
I can understand the 7, number 7.
I can read the number 6
and number 7.
I understand those individual words.
And that he brought us from Egypt and gave us the Torah. So this one is, I believe, who it was and always will be number 7 is that the first mitzvah is upon the commandments of the life that God gave us the Torah through Moses and I've seen. And I don't understand. Made the heaven and the earth. I'm reading number 8, but not now.
Is it, the question is it a mitzvah or is it a foundation for the mitzvah?
Well, number 7 says.
No, I'm not talking
about
8.
Success.
Ram, 7 will start with the word mitzvah.
Right. But this is to know. The first word in number 8 is to know. The knowledge of Tov.
Okay, we're going to pick this up next week. We're going to pick up this discussion next week. And we'll continue our chart that I started here. If it's basic or if it's a mitzvah. 16 said basic, 5 said mitzvah. So far we have the Bahag against the Rambam. The Bahag, 8th century, says it's basic. Rambam, who came after the Bahag, you'll notice, said no, it's a mitzvah. Well, let's tally up and see if we'll follow the majority or if we'll do what we want. Have a great week.
You too.
If you can hold on to them and bring them next week, that would be great.
I want to hear your name.
Okay. Right.